Meeting to order.
We do not have a quorum yet. However, we're going to get started. First of all, we're going to start with the House resolution like we like to start at every meeting, recognizing someone special in agriculture. Today, the constituent is from Representative Joe Hoppe's district, and I believe she is in attendance. And at we are recognizing Sue Knott on her achievements in agriculture. Whereas Sue Knott's agriculture interests started at her family farm near Jackson, Minnesota, Sue was involved in 4-H, FFA, and working with her family raising crops and livestock. And whereas Sue received her degree in agriculture education from the University of Minnesota, she was a high school agriculture instructor and FFA advisor for 9 years before joining the Minnesota Agriculture in the Classroom team as an education specialist in 2011. And whereas Sue's goal is to facilitate professional development opportunities through the program and empower educators to use authentic agriculture examples to teach concepts in science, social studies, language arts, mathematics, and nutrition. And whereas Sue is involved, she has involved over 1,000 college students and nearly 800 practicing K-12 teachers in professional development focused on agriculture in the classroom. And whereas Sue resides in Chaska with her husband Andy and their two daughters. Now therefore be it resolved by the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration of the House of Representatives of the State of Minnesota that it thanks her for her dedication and wishes her well in the future. It is signed by Speaker Doubt, Chair, and Majority Leader Joyce Pepin, myself, and Representative Joe Hoppe. So we do have Sue in the audience, so if we welcome her, please. Thank you. You can just wave if you want to. There she is. Everybody's looking around. Who is she? Who is she? This one. Thank you.
She did wave very modestly.
Did she? Yeah. So thank you for everything that you've done for Ag. We greatly appreciate it. And just another reminder, we are looking. We do have a few folks, right, Mr. Bratz? We do have a few people in pipeline there.
Next Thursday, we will be recognizing Tark and Margine. They own a bee hive company. They owned it for 40 years, I believe. So
wonderful. Thank you. We do have a number of minutes that we need to be approved. So we have a quorum, is present. So we have the minutes from January 13th, 15th, 20th, 22nd, and 27th. We were holding joint committee hearings, and now that we have the Ag Finance Committee, if we go ahead and approve the minutes, do you have any discussion on those? So Representative Sundin, you want to move the minutes? No?
Yes, I will.
You do? Representative Sundin moves the minutes. So any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Discussion.
I'm sorry. Hold that back.
Excuse me, we have Phyllis Kahn listed as a member of the committee.
Well, we want her to be a member of the committee.
I agree, Mr. Chair.
All right. We will make that change. Thank you so much on all of them.
Mr. Chair, if you could look into that and see if she belongs here or not.
Well, we want her here. We do. We'll look into that. Thank you so much, Ms. Bratz. All right, so going back to the motion, Representative Sundin renews his motion with the correction. All right, with the correction. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Same sign. Motion carries. Members, I do have... So, Mr. Cruz, we had already talked about this a little bit. I'm going to turn over the gavel to Vice Chair Deb Keel. I do need to step out for a moment, all right? But with that, state your name for the record and begin, please.
Thank you, Chair Hamilton and Chair Keel. Santo Cruz, Minnesota Department of Agriculture. I'll be turning it over to Charlie Poster here in a second, but I just want to do a few housekeeping items. This afternoon, you'll be getting an email with all the questions from our overviews. I'm just editing those to take out the reply alls throughout the department to get those answers to you. At 11:30, Assistant Commissioner Charlie Poster will need to head back to MDA for a listening session on our seed law that we've scheduled with a significant number of stakeholders. The scheduling conflict couldn't be avoided, so Just so you know, he'll be leaving at that time, but we will have different people to fill in on questions and to testify if we're still going at that point. With that, I would turn over to Assistant Commissioner Charlie Poster.
Thank you. Good morning, Charlie. Mr. Poster, could you identify yourself for the record, please?
Charlie Poster, Assistant Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Thank you for this opportunity to talk. We're going to talk about our ag refund this morning. In your packets, we have several reports, and we'll be kind of covering those. It's both our agri legislative mandated report and our next gen report. And they're very exhaustive. We have all the information there. What I will actually be walking through is a two-pager that looks like this. And at the top it says Agricultural Growth Research and Innovation Fund. This is a kind of a top-level summary of all the programs that are funded through AGRI. And so if we walk through this, I think we'll have a good base on which to move forward on. My goals today are kind of to inform the committee of what the Department of Agriculture has done with the funds through AGRI over the last 2 years, and a little bit on what we've done previous to that, and provide some history and talk about the partnerships that we've made with many of the stakeholders that we have here today, as well as how we administer the funds, and that the flexibility that you've given us are really key to making these very successful. So very brief piece of history on how AGRI came to be. In Governor Dayton's first term, he closed out the ethanol producer payments. That was the state's 10-year commitment to help grow the biofuels industry in Minnesota. And the budget sales were placed into the AGRI fund. This is the Agricultural Growth Research and Innovation Fund to make key investments in rural Minnesota and in agriculture. And when we talk about AGRI, I think we should start with talking about what our goals are. And we can talk first about the mission statement of the Department of Agriculture, which is to enhance Minnesotans' quality of life by ensuring the integrity of our food supply, the health of our environment, and the strength of our agricultural economy. And AGRI is specifically targeted at that last sentence, the strength of our agriculture economy. Every program that we have supported through AGRI's goal is to help agriculture in Minnesota grow, to win businesses, and just continue to make investments in rural Minnesota. So with that, I'll start with the first investment on the handle that we have, and it's the Livestock Investment Grant. This is a 10% grant eligible to any Minnesota farmer in any livestock operation. And if you open the page, open the booklet, we have a series of maps in here, and the first one is Livestock Investment Grant showing where the investments have been made throughout the state. You'll see that we've had dairy, beef, swine, poultry, sheep, goat, and even a mink farm. This is a grant whose aim is to help expand Minnesota livestock industry through partnering with Minnesota's livestock farmers. We have a competitive grant round that's open 4 times a year with roughly $1 million eligible each time. Livestock farmers apply to the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. They are pooled in that grant round and then competitively scored. The best applications receive funding. There are scores both within the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, our staff, and external scores, which include people from industry and previous winners of the grants. We think it's an excellent value. For every $1 that the Minnesota Department of Agriculture puts in, the farmer puts in at least nine, so it's at least a 9-to-1 return on investment. And if you look at some of the metrics that we have for the livestock investment grants, we've received almost 1,000 applications over the past 3+ years, requesting $16.7 million. We've been able to fund 221 of those projects, investing roughly $3.5 million of Department of Agriculture funds, and that investment by the state has leveraged $80 million in private investment around the state of Minnesota. The great news here is that that's created 1,238 construction jobs and 327 post-construction jobs. The applications get scored on a series of different criteria. Some of them are that you get extra points if you're a young or beginning farmer. That's less than 10 years of farming experience, if you address an environmental concern as part of your investment. And we're really glad to say that 90% of grantees are either entering or transitioning the farm to the next generation. 80% of the grantees have been farming for less than 10 years. So in Minnesota, where the average age of a farmer is maybe around 59 or 60, this is a small part that the Minnesota Department of Agriculture can play in helping get the next generation interested.
Is there a question? Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. I'm wondering about the mechanism for notifying the public that the grants are available. I'm looking at the map here on the livestock investment grant recipients, and it looks like maybe the state has been divided in two, but on Highway 10. And I know that Mr. Cruz is familiar with Kitson County and so forth, and Vice Chair Keel is familiar with Polk County and that area. There's not many grants being awarded in the northern part of the state, and I'm wondering why.
Mr. Poster.
Chair, Representatives, a really good question. So we work with a lot of our partner groups, and that includes the livestock groups, including Minnesota Beef Council, Minnesota Turkey Growers, Minnesota Milk, the dairy growers, the pork producers. So that we try and get it out to their membership. We also go around, we do tours highlighting some of the good investments the department has made and trying to get earned media to let their neighbors know that if they're planning on doing an investment, this is an opportunity to them, including radio, television, local papers. I actually think that is one of our biggest challenges in the successful implementation of agri, not only livestock, but the others, is making sure that every Minnesota farmer, every Minnesota food business knows that these are available. So we do extensive travel throughout the summer and winter when the grant rounds are open, both for livestock, but the other ones we'll talk about, value-added business, farm to school. I know the map is a little heavy in the south, but that's where a lot of our livestock are. We do our very best to make sure that that these are known throughout the state, not just the southern part of the state.
Representative, okay, thank you. Any, proceed, Mr. Poster.
Thank you. So currently, in addition to the numbers that we have summarized for the Livestock Investment Grant, we are currently in the process of awarding $2 million more dollars, where we expect at least another 100 farms to expand or have people enter into. So the total for the approximately 3 years will be 320 to 350 Minnesota farms that have been able to expand or grow due to the investments that the Department of Agriculture and the state have made. If there are no more questions of the Livestock Investment Grant, we'll move down to the next one, and this is the Value-Added Business Grant, where livestock is solely focused on the livestock sector. Our Value-Added Business Grant holds a little bit truer to the original intent of the ethanol payments, and that is value-added agriculture. This is our opportunity to help Minnesotans add value and quality to the products and the crops we grow. And this is a varied group. These are really Minnesota's entrepreneurs in the ag business. These are dairies, cheesemakers, consumer food producers. We actually have seen a lot of interest recently in the last few rounds of hops producers, beers, and distilleries. It's really runs the gamut. This has been very successful. Where livestock is a 10% grant, the value-added grant is a one-quarter reimbursement for a business investment up to $600,000. So the example I always give is that if a meat market or a food business wanted to invest in $600,000 of capital expenses, maybe new machinery or a new building to expand their production, they would be eligible up to $150,000 to help with that investment. Similar to the livestock investment grant, this is a competitive grant period. We open it up and ask for RFPs, travel the state trying to let Minnesota ag businesses and entrepreneurs know about this opportunity. Then we close, and they're scored again internally by the Minnesota Department of Agriculture and externally by former winners, economic development councils. And you see here as well that we've had far more demand than what we're able to fund. We've received nearly 270 applications requesting $9.5 million, and we have been able to fund 128 of those, investing $3.2 million, leveraging $13.6 million of small entrepreneurs' capital. And one of the key things I want to say about the fund overall is that partnerships make these work in almost every area, and that flexibility has allowed the department to be successful. We administer it in a way that we are able to, we have the flexibility to move funds to where the most demand is. So that has been key to all of the funds. And in this one, some of our partners include small business development councils that are throughout the state, foundations around Minnesota, including the Initiative Foundations, the Blandon Foundation, regional chambers. They let their businesses know that these funds are available. County and even more local city economic development councils. We often go to these people and present roughly what we're presenting here today and say, as businesses come into you, please let them know about the availability of these in addition to our own efforts. So much like Livestock Investment Grant, we've seen good job growth because of the investments made by the state and by these entrepreneurs. 61 full-time jobs and 108 part-time jobs. Again, we're actually in the process of administering the most recent RFP. We budgeted roughly $850,000 to 27 applicants. So those are more businesses that will be helped. And if you look at the backside of the Livestock Investment Grant, you'll see the value-added grants by county. And here, we're pleased with the geographical distribution of the investments. They've been made statewide, and really, they touch every sector within the agriculture industry, from value-added food processing, consumer foods. It's just been very successful. And I pause here for any questions on the value-added grant portion.
Members, any questions at all? Well, I think you can proceed.
Okay. We'll take silence for endorsement.
There you go.
Okay. If we turn the page, we'll go to Farm to School. I'm going to take a quick stop for a quick drink. And a question we often get is, how does Farm to School fit with the overall goal of the Agri program? And again, our goal is always to add value and expand the agricultural sector in Minnesota. And so we see schools around the state being a great opportunity to purchase and serve more Minnesota-grown food within the state. Minnesota schools purchase roughly $100 million worth of food every single year, and a small fraction that actually comes from within our state. So we see this as a goal for Minnesota farmers. And this, you hear these cliches often, but this we really consider a win-win. It's an opportunity for students to eat local Minnesota-grown, not only fruit and vegetables, but proteins, dairies, and grains, so that they're eating local healthy food, and it's a chance for farmers to have another customer right in their backyard. And this has proved very successful. So the Farm to School program helps schools overcome the barriers to serving more Minnesota-grown food. A few years ago, we did a survey asking schools, why don't you purchase more food locally? You know, what's stopping you from doing that? And the number one item was actually knives. They didn't have knives to help prepare food. There were other things like long-term storage. They didn't have walk-in coolers or freezers to store stuff grown in the producing time in the summer for the whole school year for the fall and the winter. Sometimes it was they didn't have the kitchen build-out. Maybe they didn't have food processing equipment, freezers. RoboCoos is a very common first purchase. RoboCoos is like a really, really big KitchenAid mixer. And you can dump in a bushel of cucumbers and it slices them up and it comes out in just a few seconds rather than taking a staff member a few hours. So the Farm to School grant program is another one where a partnership is key. In addition to the roughly $250,000 and then $500,000 that the Department of Agriculture put in the first and second years of the biennium, Blue Cross Blue Shield believes that this program is successful and will also meet their goals. So they have contributed $150,000 annually to this program for a total of $300,000 throughout the biennium. They believe that starting healthy eating habits early will have positive long-term impact on Minnesota. So they've been our partner in this and a very good one. We know that school budgets are tight, just like many others, and oftentimes if a school administrator goes to their principal or superintendent and says, we want to do a $100,000 investment in our kitchen, there's not a lot of chance of that passing. So the Department of Agriculture can assist with up to 50% of an investment, let's say it was $100,000, just for an example. So now the school's portion of that is down to $50,000, and with the Blue Cross Blue Shield money, that can be pushed even lower, the school's portion, down to 25%, and in a few cases we've had the school's investment be $0, so it's actually paid for by Blue Cross Blue Shield and the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. So as we look at kind of the top-level summary of how the farm-to-school program has done, we see that 120 schools have applied, requesting $2.2 million, and we've been able to fund 51 of those projects, investing $1 million. The private investment, the school investment, has been $1.45 million. Now, again, remember the goal of AGRI is to offer opportunities to Minnesota agriculture. And it's not good enough for us just to say, well, we help schools with capital investments. It's also to help them meet members of their community who can help sell them food. So you can see here estimated farmers working with grantees, 141. So these are 141 farmers who are going to profit or benefit by having a closer working relationship with their school. And we also think that the other side of the win-win is that the school children are going to benefit by eating food grown right in their backyard. I'll say, much like the travel we do for livestock investment and value added, we go to these schools to see how their projects are doing, make sure that they're successful. And I'm blessed. I mean, I get to go and see farmers in the community come in, and they see the school kids eating the food that they raised. And this is really one of our most positive programs. It's great for the farmers. It's great for the schools.
Excuse me, Mr. Poster.
Yep.
Representative Johnson would like to ask you a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Poster, I've got a bill up, so I got to run. But I do want to ask your thoughts about AGRI funded a food hub at Minnesota Valley Action Council in Mankato, what I see as a successful project. And then I see the farm-to-school program. In my mind, I put those two together well. Do you see potential for replication in other parts of the state to tie the food hub to the farm-to-school program?
Yep. Chair, Representative, thank you for the question. We toured that facility together, and that's a great success story of AGRI. They're consolidating local farmers' food, and then actually it's in the Mankato area, and they're then aggregating and selling to both restaurants, local colleges, and schools. So we really actually view the value-added business grant, the farm-to-school grant, as linked. There is another example of something very similar to that in Fergus Falls, where a food hub is serving 11 counties. So they're aggregating from farmers for those 11 counties and then helping ship to all the schools within those 11 counties. So it's a bit of a push-pull. It's a push-pull strategy. We're trying to help the farmers through the value-added business grant if they have to invest in processing equipment, food safety plans, to sell to maybe a customer that they haven't before, and also trying to help assist with the demand from schools, trying to get them to have their own storage if they need it, doing feasibility plans to see who in their community grows things or raises things that they can use. And so we're trying to help them both move forward in steps, the Minnesota's food businesses and the schools on the demand side. That was the one in Mankato, the food hub was very successful, and I think that other places around the state are also trying that model, and the one I know of is Fergus Falls, and that one is also done very well.
Thank you. Go ahead, Mr. Poster.
So if there are no more questions on the farm-to-school portion, we'll slide down one, and this is the NextGen Bioenergy and Biochemicals Grant. In addition to the AGRI report that is in your packet, you also have a NextGen report, which is also mandated, and so that's a packet, a more in-depth summary of what the state has done on NextGen grants. So the awards are made by the Commissioner of Agriculture with consultation from the NextGen Energy Board, which is made up of representatives from the administration, from the legislature, and people in industry. The goal of the NextGen board and grants is long-term research to help Minnesota's renewable energy sector, but also biochemicals and biochemistry sector. We actually have folks in the audience today who work on, you might call them green chemistry projects, trying to make products from things that we grow here in Minnesota to displace oil. And the common thing is people think of as plastics, but they also are in solvents, the things we use in paint, the things we use in pens like this. So if we look at the top summary, over the past few years, we've had 35 projects request $11.9 million. The department has been able to fund five projects for $1.7 million, which leveraged $3.6 million. You'll note that just below that, the fiscal year 15 update is that $577,000 was available for biomass thermal energy grants. The board recommended that we do this in light of last year's propane crisis. So the idea of that small kind of sub-grant was to look at ways that Minnesota can reduce our dependence on propane and see if we can start to use some of the biomass and wood pulp that we have in excess around the state to displace that propane. We've got a couple of really great grants there. Are there any questions on that portion?
Representative Metza.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one quick question on that. Wood-burning stoves, I know, have been a federal conversation, and I look at it as a pretty good way to reduce our carbon footprint overall and kind of accomplish that, and was just wondering where your department was on wood-burning stoves for farms.
Mr. Poster.
Chair, Representative, good question. Actually, one of the projects is looking at using woody biomass, largely from the northeast part of the state, to displace propane heat in poultry barns. And this was a really, really strong application. They're doing a very classic control study where they're going to have one barn run on propane, one on woody biomass to compare cost to see if it's a cost savings. They also actually think that it will have a health benefit. It's a drier heat, and they'll have improved bird health because of it. So that is just one of them. So there are actually a couple of them that are looking at substituting propane heat for woody biomass heat, and not so much in the residential sector, but rather the industrial sector. So kind of stay tuned. These are two-year-long plus projects, but definitely there's a lot of potential there. Thank you.
Representative Metza, do you have it? Okay. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick follow-up question. The study using the wood, is that burning the wood or gasification or some other process? Thank you.
Mr. Poster.
Chair, Representative, in the both the poultry and the other one is a greenhouse application where they'll, rather than use propane to heat their greenhouse, they're going to try woody biomass. I believe that both are burning the wood, not gasification.
Representative Miller, any follow-up? Okay. Go ahead, Mr. Poster. Oh, excuse me, Representative Metza.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I did have one. We're just having a sidebar here, Representative Sundin, and we did agree that a wood-burning sauna was much better than an electric sauna, so we're looking forward to seeing progress over the next few years.
I don't know if we'll do that, but duly noted.
Go ahead, Mr. Poster.
All right. If we slide down one more from next-gen bioenergy, one more piece on the biochemicals. The legislature last session made a slight change to the statute as it stands and made not only renewable energy industries eligible for the grant, also biochemicals. Minnesota's become a hub for a lot of these biochemical companies, and we hope to keep them here, and these are businesses like Sagetis, BioAmber, NatureWorks that we've had grow here, and we'd really like to keep them. And they've let us know that these dollars are important to them for long-term research. So I just wanted to also note that it's not only renewable fuels, but also renewable chemicals. And I think that was viewed very favorably by the industry. So after that, we will slide down to the blender pump cost share. And the fourth map that you have in your packet looks like this.
Excuse me, Mr. Poster. Representative Lewick has a question.
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Before we leave this area, I had a question on a number of the wood industry folks up in my area are working on pretty complicated biochemical uses for what we used to refer to as pulpwood, which we make a lot of paper out of, but they are developing a whole other range of uses. And are we directly involved in that, or is that the DNR, or who's looking after that part of the industry?
Chair, Representative.
Mr. Poster.
Excellent question. Companies that are looking to take pulp sugar and change it into either fuels or biochemicals are eligible for this. And in fact, the former Central Minnesota ethanol plant in Little Falls received a grant to go largely from producing ethanol to butanol with the help of this. And we're also, so other companies looking at producing not only ethanol, but biochemicals from either corn stover, or woody pulp are eligible for this.
Representative Lewis?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick follow-up. Are we hooked up with the University of Minnesota on the research there? We're talking about, at least my information I get from the wood industry, there's some pretty high-level chemistry and research going on there. And are we facilitating that either through Department of Ag or University of Minnesota programs?
Mr. Poster?
Chair, Representative, I just looked at our staff, and four of the current proposals are at the University of Minnesota. So it's a okay. It's a close partnership. I mean, there, even if it's industry led, some of the research, it's often in conjunction with the university.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, Mr. Poster, go ahead.
Okay, so the next portion that we'll talk about is the blender pump cost share, and I was addressing the map, the third or fourth map. We have a lot of maps. I like maps. In your packet. So, one, the original intent, of course, the grants was to add value, and actually in the statute, one of the very few things is actually named definitively is the blender pump cost share, or to install infrastructure to help with flexible fuels. We came before the legislature 2 years ago and asked for funding specifically to use more biofuels in the state of Minnesota. In fact, the legislature also set more aggressive goals 2 years ago with how much biofuels the state should use. It kind of set us on a slow, steady trajectory towards a final goal of 30% in 2025. So to help achieve that goal, again, with our partners, we have representatives, I think, from the Minnesota Corn Growers here today. We put $1 million of Minnesota Department of Agriculture funding in, and it was matched by $2 million from the Minnesota Corn Growers. The American Lung Association, who's represented here today, administers the money. And the goal of this program is to fund infrastructure for higher blends of biofuels, and in most cases, it's ethanol. So one of the challenges that we have is now every single car, your 2001 or newer, can use E15. So that's good for consumers and it's good for Minnesota farmers. Yet E15 is cheaper than gasoline, normally around a dime or so. So today the price of gas out is today is maybe $2.20. You can fill up with E15 for $2.10. Roughly, it's normally cheaper. A problem is that it's not readily available out in the marketplace. So again, the Minnesota Corn Growers, the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, and the American Lung Association are teaming to offer grants to stations who are offering E15, E30, and E85. So stations that agree to this have to sometimes put in new tanks, underground storage, but almost always new pumps. And things you have to do when you agree to the grant program is that you offer both E15 and E30 or E85 at every pump, rather than a single pump maybe over to the side, which is what happens sometimes with E85. So we want to make it as easy for consumers as possible to use this. So when you go to a station that has received a grant, what you will see is that at every single pump station, you have the choice to fill up with 87, 89, or 91, but you also have choices to fill up with E15 and E30 or E85. Again, we think this is a very, very good partnership. We're leveraging state dollars with the corn growers, but even there, we're leveraging that pool of money with that station owner's funds. And you can see that our goal 2 years ago was to have 40 stations offering this. We are at 36 currently. There are 18 that are actually currently pumping fuel, and another 18 under construction. And with roughly 4 months or so before the end of the fiscal year, we're very confident that we'll get to our goal of 40.
Okay. Mr. Poster, we have a couple of questions. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that's fantastic. Who is it that sets the standards and the regulations for installing that infrastructure? Is that the Department of Agriculture? Is that someone else? And I'll have a small follow-up after that answer.
Mr. Poster.
Chair, Representative, the PCA is actually has regulatory authority for stations. We set out in the contract what they have to offer at each pump, but the regulatory side is PCA.
Okay.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. More a point of note then, and this is just anecdotal because it's someone that I know that owns a station, and they, I don't know if they went through your program, but they sure followed it pretty closely, so they did something, but it's someone I know that owns a station, and it was such a hassle and such a problem to get the station up and running that they kind of wish they would not have done it. I mean, they were probably going to do it, but you get my point. They wish they had not have done it. There was one sticker that had to be the exact size and dimensions within like 1/100th of an inch and placed in the right place, or they would be in violation and start getting fines. They just told me some of their stories, and I would encourage you that as you want to expand this, that if you can talk with the MPCA and come up with ways that it can be a little bit more manageable for the people installing them, it would be beneficial. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Poster, do you have any comment?
Madam Chair, Representative, you know, these are early adopters in many of these stations. These are the first stations in the state to do this. So we know that there are some hurdles, and we're trying to be good partners and work with our partner agencies to get in there. It's been challenging, but we're getting there slowly but surely. Hopefully it gets easier as we have more of them. I believe that at 36 stations offering E15, we are either the single highest state in this or the second. So we've done very, very well in comparison to other states.
Okay. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Excited about hearing about this program, and just curious if you have data on those stations. You're saying it's real successful, but do you have data on showing how much more biofuels they're selling than maybe a other type of station that doesn't have this?
Mr. Poster.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative. We did not include it in this report, but we do follow up with the stations to see, you know, was it successful? And anecdotal evidence of the early adopters that their sales increased, not just of E15, but their overall sales increased. And it's a very simple reason. They're offering gas for cheaper than their competitors. You know, we think that our ultimate win with this is that we don't have to do this. Their competitors say, boy, we're losing sales because people are offering a better product at a lower price. We're going to have to do it. And so that's our ultimate goal. I don't know how long that's going to take, but it's been successful. The early stations that have adopted this have seen an increase in sales. So we continue to follow up with them.
Okay. Representative Bennett, do you have a follow-up? Okay. Representative Fabian?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Poster, I've got a couple of questions. This kind of follows up on Representative Miller's comments. I can name two filling stations in my area, highly agriculture area, that have actually taken the blender pumps out because it was so complicated, it was so difficult to work with, and the return on investment was just not there. And so, you know, if we're going to make this grow, my question is how many of other instances like this are you aware of? How many stations have taken the pumps out?
Madam Chair, Representative.
Mr. Poster.
I believe that in the past roughly 2 years, approximately 80 stations have removed their E85 pumps, and that is specifically because I think it's in direct reference to new regulation from EPA that came down through PCA about how new are their underground storage tanks, is that compatible with ethanol? Also, the actual pumps themselves, are the hoses and the fittings compatible with high level blends of ethanol? So we got that list, and we encouraged them to do everything they could to keep it. We also let them know about this program. And you talked a little bit about the return on investment. And this is where we really see a good opportunity with E15. E85 is a good fuel, often offers a great value, but only roughly 10% of the cars in Minnesota are actually able to use it. About 10% are flex fuel vehicles. You contrast that with E15, almost 85% of the vehicles in Minnesota are 2001 or newer. So that means 85% can use E15. So we view that as a real growth opportunity.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So what is the difference then in the mileage that you talked about, a 10-cent difference in the cost per gallon? What's the difference in the fuel efficiency?
Madam Chair, Representative, one of our staff members is actually kind of doing a control experiment on that right now. I use it almost exclusively, and I will tell you anecdotally, this is Charlie Poster speaking, I've noticed no difference in mileage. It's a cost savings, but I have noticed no difference in mileage. So I think it's a great product for a good price.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Poster, what is the octane rating then of E15?
Mr. Poster.
Madam Chair, Representative, E15 is 88. Generally, it's considered 88 octane, so a little bit higher than your 87 blend.
Okay, Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Poster, and then this is to follow up on Representative Miller's comments. Too often, some state agencies become a hindrance to growth. And I think we have a perfect example here. You talked about EPA and passing through MPCA and the tanks and so forth. You know, the risk that they take by imposing these rules is that they do just the opposite of what you want to happen. And, you know, I would encourage some strong conversations with some of the enforcement agencies to make sure that these goals can be accomplished. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Poster, do you want to continue?
We will. So, again, the goal of the E15 program, like the rest, is to increase the use of agricultural goods in the state. And again, I will talk about flexibility one more time, probably a few more times. But I think that what was key and what allowed us to be so successful in the implementation of not any one individual program, but all of them, is that we were able to move funding. We had the discretion to where the demand was greater, rather than have it locked in statute that we had to invest X amount of dollars in this program and X amount of dollars here. We were able to respond to where demand was greatest. And if you'll see, I would point to the livestock investment grants. Although we originally budgeted roughly $4 million over the biennium, we will probably end up investing significantly more than that, probably $4.5 million or maybe even $5 million, because the demand was greatest in that area. We had many, many more times applications in that area than we were able to fund. And so the point of that is that I think that the flexibility that we were granted, but within the goal of the shared goals and within the program that we talk about, really was key to administering this. So shifting from blender pump cost share to crop research. So in addition to our partnerships trying to come up with these ideas, I would say that each year of the program, we've gone back to our stakeholders, and that includes the commodity groups around the state, the general farm organizations, and the legislature, and presented to them what we've done, much like we're doing here today, to have a conversation about what's working, how things could change or need to be changed, and we've tried to be very flexible. And I want to use this as an example. In the first biennium that Agri existed, we didn't have any dollars assigned to crop research, but we heard from a lot of our traditional kind of ag constituents that this was a priority for them, and that the R in Agri stands for research. So in consultation with the legislature and many of our ag groups, we assigned significant dollars to crop research. And this was the first biennium that we did this. So it's been an evolution from the first biennium to this one with our partners and with the legislature. And I'll say the flexibility has been key to shift funds through the programs, but also to add or to tweak where we think it's necessary. So for crop research, the goal is to fund projects that will result in a near term, and a near term we defined as between maybe 3 and 5 to 7 years, that benefits farmers and the agriculture economy by proving that these three things are key: product quality, quantity, and value. And earlier I talked a little bit about some of the value-added grants that are going towards distilleries around the metro and brew pubs. We've actually received some great applications here trying to research specifically barley that will do well in Minnesota, barley and hops that will do well in Minnesota for our climate and for the really growing craft breweries in the state. So the industry is leading, but here we have an opportunity to also help with research dollars. So in our applications, you'll see some of the metrics. We've had 60 projects request $11.3 million. We've been able to fund so far 21 projects to the tune of $3.4 million. These are multi-year research projects. Again, many are done at the university, but they can also be led by groups of farmers who want to increase, the product quality, quantity, and value of what they're growing. I pause here for research, for questions.
Okay. Any questions? Okay. Go ahead, Mr. Polster.
Thank you. So if we shift down one, we'll move to what we dub beginning and transitioning farmers. I talked earlier about the average age of a farmer being 59 in Minnesota. And one of our goals is to help get the next generation of farmers involved and have access to farming. And the way we're trying to do that is with scholarship assistance to farm business management programs. So you can receive 50% of your farm business management tuition in the form of a grant up to 40 credits. And you'll see here that so far in the last in this biennium, we've been able to help 234 farmers take farm business management, and we've been able to invest $189,000 towards their tuition. We had set aside $300,000 available for these scholarships in fiscal year 15. And so MinSCU has campuses throughout the state. This is an opportunity for farmers in those areas to go to those schools, and the department can help assist with their tuition.
Mr. Polster, just a quick question about farm business management. When you have 236 applicants for, farmers that have applied, how many of the is there more applicants than apply or more students than apply for the application?
Madam Chair, we received 236 and we awarded 234. I'm not quite sure what happened with those two.
Okay.
But that I would say that most people who are eligible do receive the funding.
Okay, and can you just for everyone's I guess for disclosure, my son is part of this program, but can you explain what the requirements are for being a part of this application? Mr. Polster.
Yep, Madam Chair, members of the committee, you have to I believe you have to file a Schedule F, so that means you have farm income.
Mm-hmm.
Make your living by working on a living farm, and you have to attend a MinSCU eligible class where it's taught by a farm business manager. Again, I tried to talk about partners throughout where we partner. This was developed hand in hand with the farm business management instructors. We had four different campuses come in and talk about what some of their needs are and how they think it should be structured. So this wasn't the Department of Ag going to farm business management. This was inviting them in and saying, we'd like to help with farm business management and offer your services, farm business management services, to more people. How can we do that? And so together we came up with this. We thought tuition assistance was a very common sense approach to doing that.
Mr. Polster, when you also, if you get a young farmer loan or an immigrant loan, are you not required to be part of this instructive class?
Madam Chair, the staff are nodding their head, yes. Yes, so that is correct.
I wanted members to understand that this is a requirement. My last question about farm business management, how does the department use all of the records that they get off of this instruction, because everyone's numbers for their farms go together, and how do you use that?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I don't actually believe that we use it. It's FinBin is the aggregator. Uh-huh. It's the Center for Farm Financial Management at the University of Minnesota, and then they aggregate it, and it's available to the state as a whole.
Okay. My question would be is, does not the department use those numbers for, maybe I'm misunderstanding that.
Madam Chair, no, we the department actually do not collect the and aggregate the numbers about how they're doing, how their cash flow statement is, how many acres they're farming, what they're growing, but the Center for Farm Financial Management does.
Correct. Okay. Okay. Representative Bennett, do you have a question?
I do. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Poster. I had actually had an older Albert Lea area farmer talk to me about his concern, you know, with the aging farmer population and young farmers getting involved. So I'm happy to see this program. I'm wondering if there's any kind of program that this helps with the schooling part. But after those young farmers start their first few years, he was just sharing how it's very rocky. They don't have the foundation financially or other to weather a lot. Is there any kind of program that kind of comes alongside these new or young farmers during their first few years or not?
Madam Chair, Representative.
Oh, go ahead, Mr. Poster.
I'm trying to think. This is eligible for up to 40 credits we will assist with. I believe that actually can last several years. So it's not just a one-time or one-semester assistance. 40 credits can run a number of years. So I think that this is assistance through not only their first year or even maybe before they start farming, it's their first several years of farming.
Thank you. Follow-up? Or
go
just
ahead.
Just a little more. I'm speaking as a non-farmer, just learning all these things. I don't know the struggles of those beginning farmers, I'm guessing financial and so on. So maybe not only with schooling, but those with farming background maybe know more of the struggles of those beginning farmers. Are there other areas we could assist or support them during those first few years other than education like this?
Hey, Mr. Poster.
Madam Chair, Representatives, we are open to continuing, you know, trying new things. You know, here I'm trying today to talk about some of the things we have done over the past 2 years, but this is a good time to talk about, you know, what are the things potentially we could do. So that's why we're here, really, to say how are we doing and look forward to see what maybe we could or should be doing.
Good. Thank you.
Follow up? Okay. Representative Fabian?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Poster, one of the things that's taken up a lot of my time is the Farm Business Management Program and some of the issues surrounding that. And moving forward, there needs to be some fixes to the program. Representative Keel and myself have been involved in several discussions with all kinds of stakeholders. I'm wondering if the Department of Ag is working with MinSCU to try to address some of these. And it's nice to have staff here, too, isn't it?
Yeah.
But, the real smart people. Not the rest of us, that's for sure. But
they make me look good.
They do, absolutely. I'm wondering at what level you're having discussions with MinSCU and if you're going to be bringing forth some recommendations, you know, to address the concerns long term, you know, to do something short term and put a Band-Aid on it. You know, that's one thing, but I think that we really need to take a look down the road to make sure that the program stays viable for many, many years. So, again, my question is what are you doing in cooperation with MinSCU, and are you going to be bringing recommendations to this body?
Mr. Poster.
Madam Chair, Representative, we've tried to say again, it's a priority. It's a valuable asset for the state of Minnesota to have a strong farm business management program. You know, it's funded through MinSCU, and through the education committee, so it's a little bit outside of our what we present and testify on, but we continue to say to our partners, our constituents, that you know this is a asset to have in the state of Minnesota and to our constituents, farmers. So we just started to talk about it as a priority, and that's important that it's there.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Poster, my specific question is what discussions are you having with MinSCU to try to come up with a solution to fix the problems that exist with the Farm Business Management Program?
Okay.
And if you need to get back to me with that, I'm okay with that, but I do want to know that.
Okay. Mr.
Cruz.
Santos Cruz. There you go.
Chair Keel, Representative Fabian, I was just going to say the same thing. I will look into that, find out what conversations are going on. I've had times like this at the table before where I want to say, I don't think we actually are having that conversation. I go back and Mary or someone from the department says, I hope you didn't say that because we're absolutely having that conversation. So this is something that there's a right or wrong answer to. I'll find out, and I'll get it to you all.
Thank you. I appreciate that, too. Do you have any other questions?
No, but that's what I'm trying to drill down to, and we do need those answers, those recommendations and so forth to come to us so that we can address it, you know, intelligently and let the smart people work to develop some solutions for us.
Chair Keel, if I may.
Yes, go ahead,
Chair and Representative Fabian. This highlights a really good part of what Agri is about, how we look at these hearings, because we do these hearings every year. You know, the legislation says in consultation with the legislature, and certainly that was part of the original language where we actually set up kind of the bones of what Commissioner Poster was talking about with regard to how many blender pumps, and we made promises that we were going to keep. But then the tweaks and the flexibility that we have coming to report today to you all, we get these ideas from Representative Bennett, Representative Fabian, and we come back and we do tweak the programs, we do reprioritize, we do do new things, and it's the flexibility which allows us to do that. Perfect example is last year we had one of the worst winters in Minnesota's history, certainly for farmers. That led to a huge issue with rail congestion. Rail congestion led to people not being able to get their crops out. There was stockpiles. We had issues with propane because then it became an issue of, because of the Bakken oil, railroads were shipping more oil, less propane. So you look at the NextGen project with regard to corn stover and woody biomass for poultry. That was a quick response to a crisis that occurred in the marketplace where we had the flexibility to say we're going to look into this quickly. And because we have that flexibility through the statute, we're able to respond to those crises when they happen. A lot of these crises are much bigger than the department can possibly take on. But this program gets our foot in the door of being able to do something right away. And we appreciate that trust.
Thank you. Questions at all? I would just make a comment. You probably want to get going because you've got a little bit of time more. But the Farm Business Management Program not only walks hand in hand with young farmers, but also works in group situations so that they have a connection. There are marketing instruction also that they kind of work together with the instructors. So there's a lot of background there besides the actual book work that goes on, and it really connects people. So it's a good program, and it's very valuable, especially for our young farmers. It just gives them a little stability when they're starting out, and I think our older farmers not necessarily like to let go of it. It's a comfort level and background. So, but like Representative Fabian said, we really need to work hard at figuring out how we're going to work between the Department of Agriculture and the Minscu system to make that successful. So, thank you very much, Mr. Poster. Would you like to continue?
Yes, please, Madam Chair, members. We'll slide down to the next area that we'll cover, and this is the Sustainable Ag Demonstration Grants. This is more on-farm research in contrast to the crop research that we talked about above. These grants are $25,000, so smaller in scale for farmers to actually try on their farm. And the goal of this is an opportunity for farmers, nonprofit groups, and ag researchers and educators to explore ways to improve the sustainability of a wide range of farming systems. In the last several years, we've had 30 projects apply, requesting $548,000, and we've been able to fund 19 projects, resulting in $268,000 invested in those farms. Looking forward for fiscal year 15, we have $250,000 that is available. Applications were due just at the end of January, and I believe that we're actually scoring those now. And to kind of contrast these with the crop research, this is almost always farmer-led, people who are trying innovative things on their farm. It's not like a controlled experiment necessarily at the university, but they're trying things in a real world. These are demonstration grants.
Representative Clark, do you have a question?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just curious, have any of those grants gone to urban farmers or any applications made from urban farming groups?
I apologize. I did not hear that.
I was just asking, Madam Chair, if any of those grants or actually the several programs that you've talked about gone to urban farming groups or farmers.
Commissioner Poster.
Madam Chair, Representative, I've noting that we've had at least one go to an urban farming group. And but more importantly, they're eligible. So there's nothing to stop them from applying. And I think, you know, much like when we looked at the livestock investment grant earlier, we see that it's heavy in the salt. That's kind of by the fact that a lot of our livestock's in the salt. We haven't had a lot of people necessarily apply, but they are eligible. And, you know, I think it's our job to continue to get the word out.
Thank you. Go ahead, Mr. Poster.
Yes. I'm going to do a little housekeeping. I know that Charlie needs to head back to the department in the next minute or so here to be respectful to the stakeholders that will be meeting at the department.
Correct.
For a listening session that he'll be running. I think we'll be moving Mary Hanks down to the hot seat to finish out the presentation. I did talk with Committee Minister Mark Nisely. We've pretty much covered the next gen report through this lens. And I know that there are stakeholders here that would like to testify. We want to be respectful of their time as well. So we would cede the rest of the time after this presentation to whatever the chair would select to do for the testimony.
Thank you, Commissioner Cruz.
And I just wanted to say thank you for the opportunity. We have three more areas to cover, and Division Director Mary Hanks will cover the three on the back page: Gap Gift, County Fairs, and New Market Development. Thank you for this opportunity to talk about these, and we're always available, of course, for more questions.
Thank you for being here, Commissioner. Good luck with the next phase of your day. By the way, Commissioner Poster, I appreciate the maps, too. I think that was a great way of seeing where everything was at. Yes.
My name is Mary Hanks. I'm the Director of the Ag Marketing and Development Division at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. And I will try to pick up where Charlie left off. If you look at the page that starts with GAP certification cost share, what we found in working with some of the value-added businesses and some of the farmers who want to start selling beyond the farmer's market, some of their buyers require good agricultural practices certification. So we followed the model that we've been using for a number of years of cost-sharing organic certification costs. So we now provide a 75% cost share for GAP certification as well, allow some of these farmers to get into retail, restaurant, and institution. GAP certification, someone comes out to the farm, inspects, makes sure that you're using safe practices as you're producing food that's going to go out to the public. We've had 47 farmers and handlers receive the cost share at $30,852, and this is open year-round, kind of first come, first serve. Right now we don't have, we have plenty of area for more people to apply for this. GAP certification is, I don't know how new it is, but there's a limited number of people right now who are certified. We'd like to get that increased. If there are any questions on that. Moving on.
Go ahead.
To county fairs. 2 years ago, county fairs received funding for Minnesota History and Cultural Heritage through some legacy funding. I guess that was 3 years ago. That project was moved to Agri funding for this biennium at $1 million each year. The legislature last year increased that with another $200,000 for fiscal year 15. That money goes in equal share to every county fair to do Minnesota history, cultural, arts programming.
Excuse me. Representative Miller, do you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and you must have seen me like looking, getting ready for a question. So sorry to interrupt. I really didn't mean to do it at that point. I must have. Sorry that I did that. You kind of touched on it, so my question changes as you were talking. The way that I understand it, this was legacy funding, but it was removed from legacy and put into agriculture. So the question that I have then is, I think there's a question in here. There's no legacy funding requests that will be happening in this direction then is what you're saying? Because I've kind of heard, I'm on the legacy committee and I've kind of heard otherwise. So I just want to clarify where the boundaries are.
What was the count, Madam Chair,
Ms. Hanks.
Representative Miller? This was not initiated by the department with legacy funding. I believe it came from the county fairs. And
that's correct.
And you know, then it was moved by the legislature to Agri. I don't know what the county fairs are planning to do at this point. We are including money for county fairs in our proposed Agri portfolio of grants, although we talk to every single county fair, and they would like a little more flexibility with how to use these dollars. Some of the fairs have their livestock barn may need a new roof, but we're only providing money for maybe an art exhibit. And our proposal would be to open this up way more broadly and allow the fairs to use it for something agriculture-related, ag education, instead of just arts and culture.
Chair Keel, if I may add on to that.
Oh, go ahead.
Chair and Representative, you know, the county fairs are they're a great effort in raising awareness about agriculture annually for the general public, especially in outstate Minnesota. They provide a great service there. And I do think they fit within Agri for that reason. However, the proposal we have going forward would remove the rider that it would need to be for arts, because that was the rider language that you would need to be in the legacy money to qualify for that. These are general fund dollars, and quite frankly, the needs of the county fairs are very widely, from a new roof, as Mary stated, to perhaps new barns, things like that, that are a tougher sell, so to speak, or a tougher argument to make that they're somehow tied to the legacy rider language. So we're doing more of a house cleaning on that, because these are general fund dollars, not legacy dollars, that they shouldn't have that same rider, and there should be that flexibility for the county fairs to enjoy those funds as they need them.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that. And by no means do I want you to think that I am not fully supportive of this, because I think this is great. Just because I'm on both committees, I'm kind of suffering through the support, not supplant discussion. And when I get over to my other committee, I want to be clear on that. So thank you very much for the explanation. That helps me a lot. So thank you.
Thank you for the question.
That's the Representative Miller, that's quite a conversation when you're a freshman support and supplant. So Representative Fabian.
Supplement. Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Ms. Hanks and Mr. Cruz, you obviously have been reading my notes that I was making during the presentation here.
Yeah. Would that I could.
Yeah. That or else you're sending subliminal messages to me, and then I'm putting it down on paper, right? Please ask this question. Okay, so I want to be clear on where's the funding coming from. Is this a pass-through from Legacy to Department of Ag? So now you're taking money out of the department. You're shaking your head. Okay, I want to, for the record.
Chair.
Commissioner, go ahead.
Chair and Representative, these are general fund dollars. These are not a pass-through from the legacy, from the, you know, the 25-year tax money that is a different committee that Representative Miller's on. These are general fund dollars. What Mary Hanks had described before was originally the money was from there, and that's where we got the rider language. But once that funding stream was replaced by something else, it found its home in Agri, and then it became part of a general fund appropriation to Agri.
So go ahead, Ms.
Madam
Hanks.
Chair, Representative Fabian. So Agri is appropriated $10.235 million per year. $1 million of that is earmarked for county fairs.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Hanks, you said that it was moved from legacy to agriculture. And I realize that oftentimes the legislature does things in spite of what you may recommend or whatever. I'm asking, can anybody tell me why it was moved? Was it just to save money from legacy and appropriate those dollars someplace else?
Madam Chair, Representative Fabian, it was done at the tail end of of a session, and so we weren't part of a conversation, so we're not sure.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, funny how that works, isn't it? You know, I would, and I don't know what we can do here in committee, but I would strongly encourage us as an agriculture community to change how these funds are used at the county fairs. I like the idea. I wrote down before you said it, I wrote down flexibility. I think that these dollars should be being used to promote agriculture. And, you know, we have other mechanisms in place here in St. Paul that can be used for arts and cultural heritage and Minnesota history and so forth. So I'm hoping that we can address this issue at a time when fewer and fewer people are actually living on or making a living on the farm or living in rural communities. You know, we do a great job in rural Minnesota at the Roseau County Fair, the Kitson County Fair, the Marshall County Fair, Polk County Fair, of promoting ag and being strong supporters of agriculture. I'm sure even over in Representative Metz's district, they do a lot of stuff over there, farming taconite pellets and stuff. I'm not, I know you have cows. But my point is that as we get closer to the suburban area, there's becoming less and less of a connection. So I would strongly encourage this committee and the legislature to have some discussions about redirecting these funds and putting them into a program that would better serve agriculture. I mean, if it's going to come out of the ag budget, then let's spend the money wisely.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Fabian, well, you'll see as our budget comes before you that we have responded to what the county fairs have told us and want the money to go for promoting agriculture and doing ag education at those fairs. So I think we're right in line with what you're talking about.
Representative Fabian. Oh, you're done. Okay. I would say that it is very appropriate that legacy funds are used, because you look at the county fair, there are all kinds of things that happen there that are part of our history as well as our arts, but it would be nice to have it a little more flexible than just very, very complicated. So Representative Lewick has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. More of a comment, and I follow somewhat the logic there that Representative Fabian just outlined, but I do want to emphasize that typical county fair in our part of the state, you've got entire buildings that are dedicated to art, entire buildings, a huge population that exhibit in a whole wide variety, young people, middle-aged, and older people. So I would just ask that we all be a little cautious here, because as I understand the legacy funds, once you start a level of effort in a state agency or other funding level, you're just automatically blocked out from now going and taking your legacy funds and putting them toward an existing program. So that's a huge concern that I have, that what we may consider art may not be viewed in the same manner maybe downtown in this part of the state. But you know, needlepoint and all kinds of things show up where I live, and it's a big deal. So, but we need to be careful here that we don't sweep things that were funded from by legacy funds and then block ourselves, our county fairs, from being able to then go back and ask. They're going to get turned down because they say, well, no, you guys are funded by the Department of Ag. We can't touch that. So a little caution here, please.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Do you have any comments?
You know, okay. Chair, if I may, I would say I wish Chair Hamilton were here, because he and I had a conversation before the session started, and he talked about wanting this session. And I think that a lot of what we're talking about today is about doing the and, not the or. And we hear those comments. We understand that the county fairs are important, but also we don't want to hamstring ourselves by pursuing one stream in supplant of another.
Thank you, Commissioner. Do we have any other questions? We probably should let you finish, huh? Go ahead, Ms. Haynes.
Madam Chair and members, the final area that I'd like to talk about on your sheet is called new market development. This goes hand in hand with the value-added business grants. Often small and medium-sized food companies find it cost prohibitive to expand into larger domestic or international markets. So in we have two small projects where at some of the larger food shows we put up a Minnesota pavilion and cost share booth space for some of the small and medium-sized food companies in Minnesota so that they can go and sell to a larger number of buyers. By having the Minnesota pavilion, the Minnesota name, there's recognition. We like to believe that you see the Minnesota name and you think quality and a lot of integrity to what's being built or what's being produced. So we cost share. We buy the booths at full price and offer the them then to these food companies for half the price, and then put them under our state name. Also, we have something called a trade show support program. The first program, we go to a certain number of shows like the National Restaurant Association, the Fancy Food Show, some of those where we put the Minnesota Pavilion. But we also cost share for these same businesses to go to other shows that we may not be putting the Minnesota Pavilion in. So we, again, cost share some of their expenses, helping them find new markets. Some of them are ready to move out of direct marketing or just marketing to Minnesota. This gives them some assistance. And we have a business development person that can help them look at what the markets are, where their opportunities are, and help them pick some of those shows. So far, we've invested about $350,000. And the return on investment, these companies are telling us that sales have been really good, and they're seeing a 12-to-1 return on their investment to go to these shows.
Okay. Members have any questions? Well, I thank you very much. Commissioner, do you have any comments?
Well, as much as I, Chair, appreciate the promotion to Commissioner, I think when I go back, I'm going to be ribbed so hard for not disagreeing with you before this hearing is over. So
I apologize, Mr. Cruz.
To be honest with you, I ribbed Charlie Poster about being called Deputy Commissioner at the Senate hearing, and he never corrected the record. So I know that that's coming my way if I don't just say before I get off the stand here that I am not a commissioner, but you could talk to my boss about making that happen.
Oh, there you go.
At any rate, thank you very, very much. And again, as we said, we'll be taking off to MDA and see the rest of the time to stakeholders of some of these programs. So thank you again.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for the opportunity.
You bet. Thank you. Excuse me, I have to put my glasses on. is there a Mr. Brendan Jordan here? I think he would like to speak to us from the Great Plains Institute and testify. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Jordan. Would you identify yourself for the committee and who you represent?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I am Brendan Jordan. I work for the Great Plains Institute, and I'm here in my capacity representing the Bioeconomy Coalition of Minnesota. The Bioeconomy Coalition is a group of includes a number of folks from industry, agriculture, forestry, and the environmental community, working to expand Minnesota's bioeconomy, which we take to include biofuels, renewable chemicals, bio-based chemicals, and also biomass thermal energy. I'm here today to talk about the important role that the NextGen Grant Program has played, and we hope will continue to play in helping that industry to grow. We believe it's very consistent with the NextGen Energy Board's mission to achieve energy independence, agricultural and natural resource sustainability, and rural economic vitality. Since its inception, the NextGen grants have supported a number of projects in bioenergy, biofuels. I wanted to focus in on one area today, which is the bio-based chemical space. In 2013, the legislature expanded the scope of the NextGen grant program to include not just bioenergy and fuels, but also bio-based chemicals. We kind of use renewable chemicals interchangeably with bio-based chemicals. What are bio-based chemicals? Commissioner Poster addressed this somewhat, but basically anything you can make from fossil materials, you can also make from agricultural or forestry materials. And they can be used in a whole variety of settings. Think of plastics, specialty chemicals. If you think of an oil refinery, perhaps 5% of their total output is chemicals. The rest is fuels and energy. But that might represent 40% of the value. And so, in looking at that industry, there's a lot for a lot of benefit potentially for our own biorefineries to look at petroleum refineries. Bio-based chemicals is important as well for Minnesota because we have probably the largest cluster of bio-based chemical companies in the country. We've had over $200 million in venture capital investment come into the state, investing in these facilities. We've had several initial public offerings. But our biggest challenge as a state is to help companies scale up here because there obviously is competition for attracting fully scaled up commercial plants. As I noted in 2013, the legislature did make some changes to the next gen board provisions to allow investment in bio-based chemicals. In the most recent grant round, two companies in the bio-based chemical space were awarded grants. One of them is called Sagetis, one of them is called Green Biologics. Since being awarded NextGen grants, and not totally due to, but certainly helped, both of these companies have announced commercial-scale plants in Minnesota, total investment exceeding $150 million. Although NextGen makes relatively small grants in the big scheme of things when we're talking about projects at that scale, up to $500,000, not sufficient by itself to build a commercial plant, we believe that these grants play a very crucial role in supporting research and development activities, feasibility, engineering studies that can help a company get ready to scale up in Minnesota, help them complete innovative research, and basically prepare, travel that commercial scale learning curve. We believe that the NextGen grants did help with those companies and will continue to help going forward. The NextGen grant program has supported and will continue to support, we hope, a growing bioeconomy that includes biofuels, renewable chemicals, and biomass thermal energy that will have a significant economic impact on the state. I'll just refer briefly to a University of Minnesota study completed this year that found that a growing renewable chemical, advanced biofuel, and biomass thermal energy industry could conservatively result in $900 million in new economic output and more than 3,000 new jobs for the state. I would urge the committee to continue to support this this important program and work to help to grow Minnesota's bioeconomy, taking advantage of both forestry and agricultural materials. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Jordan. Did anyone have any questions at all? Why, thank you for joining us today. Thank you very much. Is there anybody in the audience that would like to testify on this agri conversation that we just had and or the next gen? Anybody at all? Okay. Well, then I guess members can look forward to much more discussion about all of the upcoming meetings on the committee reviews and the governor's recommendations, and then as we work to assemble the omnibus finance bill. Okay? And with that, have a good day. Committee's adjourned.